Hey, movie lovers, you can enjoy Real Nerds Podcast in many ways. You can go to our website, realnerdspodcast.com. There you'll find articles and the podcast. You can go to our YouTube channel and you will see the Real Nerds Pod Show. We're also on Blue Sky. Hey, did you know Facebook is still a thing for people? Yep, we're on there too. We are also on Threads. There are many ways to interact with us. All our film adventures are posted on Instagram. If you have a social media account, you can find the Real Nerds Podcast.
Camera, action!
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd
just
can...
talk to film!
I'm sorry.
Take it outside.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd will turn out all the gods. Lights, camera, action!
Welcome to Real Nerds Podcast, where every week we see a new movie and we podcast our experience to the world. This week, we saw The Devil Wears Prada 2. Stay tuned where we'll look good or not, recommend the film, play the trailer, and then spoil the movie. We also talk about the movies we watch throughout the week, nerd stuff that's happened throughout the week as well. Brad, how you been? How's the booth coming along for Fan Expo?
Pretty good considering the short timeline. Spending a lot of extra time at thrift stores looking for stuff.
Yeah, it seems like a safe place to find 80s, late 70s kind of stuff.
But there's like this cool stuff that I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and I think that's hopefully what we're going for when people see it, that they'll just, you know, be transported maybe to their youth or maybe what their parents said the 80s were like.
Yeah, just get a vibe.
Yeah, that's what we want, the vibe.
I hope people play the games. That'd be cool.
Yeah, but yeah, it looks like it's coming along well. All I've been doing is working, so I have nothing really to say except, you know, work.
Yeah, I made new stickers and business cards, so hopefully those show up too.
Those should show up on time. And but we did freshen up the logo a little bit. It looks 80s style.
Yeah.
Because we're coming up on our 15th anniversary.
15 years.
Yeah.
It's
Well, we've seen a new movie every week. We haven't missed a week yet.
I'm still waiting for Guinness to like call us up and say, hey, you guys deserved an award for longest
consecutive podcast. Is Guinness still a thing?
Yeah. Some guy just got awarded the largest Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles collection in the world.
You won a Guinness?
I didn't. Some other guy. I wish. Collections.
Yeah, you realize that even your collection is, you're not a hardcore collector. You know,
there's always someone out there with more money than you.
I know. I remember this guy, he was in the Guinness Book of World Records for Spider-Man, and he would get comics too if it just had a kid wearing a Spider-Man shirt in it or something. And I don't know how you find that out. but he'd pick up, I don't know, an X-Men comic, and it'd be some kid running in and had Spider-Man on the shirt. And I think he was actually, it came out because he was really sick and he had to sell it. And like one thing to pay for, which is sad because, you know, we live in America and we decide not to help people when they're sick. So he sold it all, or most of it, to pay for his health care. And I should follow up on that story. That was a few years ago. I wonder if he passed away. I hope he didn't. But yeah, you always find that there's someone who's a little more crazy than you are.
Yeah.
Even me, I have a Mortal Kombat wall and... because of algorithms, Mortal Kombat stuff pops up on my feed all the time. And this one guy says, yeah, I'm so excited for the new Mortal Kombat 2 movie. And it pans across, and I got the Shao Kahn bucket, but it pans across and he has all the buckets. And then his wall has those Sideshow collectible life-size busts that are, you know, $1,700. And he has every single one. And I go, oh, yeah, I don't have any of those.
I like how they always act like it's such like this amazing rare find.
Yeah.
That they picked up. It's like, well, yeah, because you're like a millionaire.
Yeah.
And can just do that. Like, I've seen those things before, but I stopped myself.
Yeah.
Because
I cannot. I have, I literally will go, and if even the 90s Mortal Kombat comics, they're pretty rare. They're from Malibu, which was an offshoot of Marvel that I folded like in the mid 90s. And I think even, I mean, some of them are pretty expensive. They're, you know, $30-$40. And I always see them every once in a while. And I go, man, do I want to spend just to get one of them? And there's other guys, oh, just I'm going to buy the whole. And I just, yep. I can't do it. And that's, I think, the heartbreaking thing is, for me as a collector, is I'll never own the first appearance of Spider-Man. I'll never own probably Amazing Spider-Man 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Maybe 1 through 11. I have number 12 because a friend of the podcast, who used original host of the podcast, James, man, years ago, probably 15, 16 years ago, issue 12 was at Coins, Cards, and Comics. And it was a high grade one, and it was $150 at the time. And he bought it for me and just put it in my hold slot. And that was really nice. And now even that comic is, you know, $900, $1,000 in, you know, 15, 16 years because they don't make any more of them. And do you have a first printing of the first appearance of the Ninja Turtles?
Second.
That's still pretty expensive, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, second and third. And I forget which version I got signed, so.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, I mean, obviously I have reprints of it, but, you know, the first appearance of Spider-Man sells for over $1 million, and, well, one day if I play Powerball, which I never play, and win, I'll buy that Spider-Man, and I'll fly somewhere to get it, and I'll have a metal briefcase, and I'll, you know, handcuff it to my wrist, and
it gets graded in the case.
Yeah. Yeah, those will be the days of something that never happened for me.
Yeah, I've given up ever having that first one, but it's fine.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, I mean, I don't have to have it to for my life to be complete. It's,
yeah, if it happens upon me, I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not gonna seek it out.
I want to be the guy who's at a garage sale and I find it, you know.
Yeah,
but you always think that people are too sophisticated now and being able to have the internet at their fingertips, but every once in a while because I watch a show called American Pickers, and they went into this one guy's, it was his dad's home, and he passed away, and he was and they're selling his collection. And he had a lot of, you know, kind of cool antiques, but in one case, he had the first appearance of Spider-Man, a really early Superman from 42 or 43, and the guy who was selling it had no idea what they were worth. And he didn't even know it was the first appearance of Spider-Man. Which is really weird to me because you'd think that Spider-Man's so much in the lexicon of pop culture and Amazing Fantasy 15 is such an iconic image that everybody would know. But then you realize that not everyone cares about it. And
yeah.
So, you know, maybe one day I'll be really lucky. And, well, I was. I got the first appearance of the Green Goblin, being very lucky and being kind to Andrew, our old comic book guy, who sold it to me for $125. And if I ever had an opportunity like that, I don't know what the most I would spend on it, but.
Whatever your wife says.
Yeah, that's true.
You can.
My wife doesn't tell me what to do. Anywho, this week, Brad, we saw The Devil Wears Prada 2. Do you recommend a second date with Andy?
Ooh. Yeah, it's not bad. It's a lot like the original. Plot beat wise, like a lot of the same things happen around the same time, just updated for 2026. And, you know, the modernization of it, I feel like works really well. The characters are likable, you know, I'm not about to buy the Blu-ray of it, but I enjoyed it.
See, what sucks for me is I'm an Emily Blunt completist.
You are.
And I will wait until it's, you know, the Amazon
Black
three,
Friday.
Yeah, three for, you know, 26 or something. Same boat. I'll talk about it later in spoilers, but everybody's great in the movie. It just doesn't feel like it's for me, you know? And I'm in the minority. It's made, I'm guessing it's going to make over $200 million in a couple weeks. I don't know. It's just, I mean, I giggled at some parts, but the whole time I was watching it, I go, I don't think this movie's made for me. And that's okay. That's okay. So yeah, here's a trailer for The Devil Wears Prada 2.
Runway. It's not just a magazine. It's a global icon. A winding road that brings us back together again.
Hello?
Well, look what TJ Maxx dragged in.
Sorry. Who is this? Do you know her? Do I know her?
I'm Andy Sachs. Andrea.
She was one of the Emilys.
One of the what? A hallucination.
Hi, Emily.
You also know her?
We were at Runway at the same time, Miranda.
Really? Where was I?
Where would you like to start?
I am the new features editor at Runway.
No, you are not.
Yeah, we are all so thrilled.
You know what's funny is you've changed. You have. You're much more confident. Kept those eyebrows, though, didn't you?
So we pick up The Devil Wears Prada 20 years later with Andy. She is now a journalist. Is that something she wanted to do in the first movie? I can't remember.
Yeah, she... sounds better too. She was working. She was like, she couldn't get a job in journalism, so that's why she took the Prada thing. Yeah.
So yeah, so she's a journalist. She just won an award, and then they fire their whole staff because, as we know, journalism is dead. And so now she has to get another job, and she's offered a features editor at
Runway.
Can you tell I was really invested in the movie?
Yeah, you're clearly paying attention.
Yeah, and Runway with...
Just staring at Emily Blunt the whole time. You gotta
listen to the plot. In it enough. I can't. And, of course, Miranda, her old boss, her old nemesis, get me Armani on the phone. I always picture just Michael Scott now.
He's going to kill me. Yeah. Yeah.
And Miranda is trying to navigate this new world where she's
not the top of the food chain anymore.
Yeah, and also she's not, the way she treats people isn't okay anymore, and she's had to learn that.
Now she has to deal with HR.
Yeah. Because I do think there's really funny scenes where, I forget what she said, she said, yeah, you can't say that anymore. And so she's having to navigate these meetings where, before, she would just snap her fingers and people would do stuff. But she's also gunning for this really high position in the company that owns the magazine. I did like that Kenneth Branagh also doesn't have a really big part in it, but he brings a lot of levity to the movie because he's such a great actor. I thought he was really important. Is he in the first one? I don't even remember.
I don't remember.
I don't think he is.
I don't think he's either, but I'm also trying to think, like, who was that? Did she have, like, a different partner before him?
I can't remember.
Or was he just, like, we never saw that guy, and now he's being played by Kenneth Branagh?
I think maybe we never saw him, because I think they mentioned that she was married.
Yeah.
But, I don't remember. I'm not a super fan.
Oh, no. In the first one, she, like, later on breaks down because she's getting a divorce.
Oh, that's right.
So, he must be, like, a new guy.
Yeah, and he's he plays in a quartet. He's a musician, as Kenneth Branagh is.
I don't remember.
You don't remember his character?
I thought he was just a stay-at-home dude.
I mean, that'd be sweet. Hey, babe, go make me some money.
Well, he just takes care of everything she can't handle, like, domestic-wise, because she's so invested in her job.
Yeah, and so Andy decides she's going to try to get this elusive interview with one of the wealthiest women in the world, played by Lucy Liu, who also has a really small role. I wonder if, again, I just don't know this movie is obviously super popular. Maybe it's just the sequel is something that people want to be in, And so Lucy Liu says, hey, you know, I'll take a small role. Was it like a week of shooting? And I'm guessing that's what happened because they love the movie.
Yeah, that's what they're talking about with the advertisers. When they made their first movie, they couldn't get like Prada to call them back and all these other advertisers. They couldn't do like in movie promotion. And when the sequel came out, like everyone like lined up because they wanted to be in it.
That makes sense because I think the first one was kind of
product placement.
Yeah, slowly built momentum to being a, I mean, it's, you can't even say it's a cult classic. It's a comedy classic. I mean, Anne Hathaway's great in it. I love her character arc. I love her determination. I think Emily Blunt steals the movie again. She's in it really not, she's not in it very much, but I love how she's in it. Because, you know, as the story unfolds and, you know, Miranda is realizing maybe she doesn't have the pull she used to, and they're supposed to do this fashion show in Milan. Is that right? Do I remember that part right? Or is it Spain?
I think it's Milan.
All right, cool. We'll just say it is, because then I'll feel better about myself. And, I mean, there's some funny bits where someone backed down, they couldn't get anybody. She says, calling a favor, and she says, I'm not calling her. And it's revealed to be Lady Gaga, and she hates
Miranda.
Miranda. but she's doing it because of a favor. And I actually really liked Stanley Tucci's arc in it, too, that he's kind of the guy behind the scene helping everybody.
Yeah. And he got screwed over in the first movie.
Yeah. And then, you know, at the end, they revealed that he's a reason Andy came back. And it's kind of a little fun.
Oh, yeah.
You know, hey, you really think you just got here on your own? No, I set this up for you, and that's why you're here. I guess I would say if you're a fan of it, it felt like it was kind of a warm comfort, you know. I did think the characters grew from the first one, which is important. You know, because even Emily Blunt's character, Emily, she's the in charge of everything at Louis Vuitton, some purse place. I don't know.
Yeah, I forget.
No, it wasn't Louis Vuitton.
No.
Fudge. See, this is why this movie's not for me. Because I'm supposed to, I think, be impressed with what Anne Hathaway's wearing, too, because she's always wearing these really cool-looking clothes. And I think I'm supposed to know what they are, but it goes over my head. And I know it did because the theater I saw it in, 2 weeks later, it literally was still full midday with a bunch of fans of the movie, and they were laughing and clapping. And I just sat there saying, huh, I don't think this movie's for me, but it doesn't mean it's not well made, and it doesn't mean it's not funny at parts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool, like, that, you know, a lot of the different people in it do have, like, connections to the plot that are, like, earned. Like,
yeah.
You know, Emily Blunt's character comes back, and she's got the job that she wanted in the first movie. But she's dating Justin Theroux, who's like, you know, this
idiot
billionaire. And then I didn't really see it coming that like their relationship would end up kind of make them turn them into the villains of the movie.
Yeah.
By the end, like I didn't see that coming. So and I'm glad that like, you know, it didn't totally go down. Like they weren't like totally evil or something.
No,
like, it's just like, they're just like dumb con artists, I guess, in a way.
And you know, trying at the end of the day, they're really trying to help Emily and Andy by, because they thought, you know, I guess my only problem, and I mentioned this after we saw it and before we did this podcast to you, is I have a hard time empathizing with Miranda because she treats people so poorly, and then I'm supposed to care about her now. I had a really hard time with that, and I guess I can't look past about how she treated people.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm supposed to care because she's going to be out on her ass, you know?
Oh, you have some, you're able to respect Gordon Ramsay. Like, he's a dick in the kitchen, but a nice guy outside of it.
Sure.
As far as we know.
Yeah. No,
I mean, never met him.
I mean, I would say he probably is. He's been married for 30 years, so there's probably something to it. Has a lot of kids and his kids love him. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I guess, but it's, I don't know. I don't understand the value. I don't know why Andy, and I think she did too, because she's writing, she's offered a lot of money to write a book about Miranda.
Oh, yeah.
And she doesn't want to. And at the end, Miranda says, no, you need to write it about how horrible of a person I am. And this is why Meryl Streep can do anything, because she's so good in that scene, saying, no, you got to. Oh, she mentions her failed marriage in that. Remember, in the limo. So she's so good. And then you do have empathy for her that maybe she's playing a character when she's at Runway, because she has some vulnerable moments too with Kenneth Branagh. And yeah. I think it's, I mean, I guess, I don't know.
I mean, I think at some point she says, like, or alludes to, you know, to be like a high profile woman like I am, like to work with all these billionaire dudes, like, I can't just be this pushover. I just remember BJ Novak's in the movie.
Yeah, he is. He's the billionaire's son.
Like, there's so much going on because, like, yeah, he's got the whole, like, his dad dies, so he has to take over the company and then strip mine it. And then, yeah, then Andy kind of finds a new relationship with the landlord guy.
Yeah.
Which is a nice upgrade from her, like, just douchey, silly friends taking her phone and stuff. Like, but he also, he is kind of like a little bitch about it.
He totally is.
Like, she's working really hard at this thing. And
yeah, and at the end of the day, it's Anne Hathaway who's, I mean, stunning. I'd be like, all right, cool. I guess I'll see you later.
Yeah. Maybe I do overcharge people for this space.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I did save this building, so I'm a good person.
And he's Australian, so, you know.
But yeah, a little more mature of a relationship there as opposed to the other guy who's just like, you didn't spend my birthday with me.
Yeah, so I guess, yeah, there's a good growth in the characters. And, you know, like I even mentioned on my review on Letterboxd, everybody is, I mean, on their A game. I mean, they're all great actors. And you're, it's one of those movies that I'm sure the budget was probably $150 million because every single one of them. It's interesting when you think back 20 years ago where Anne Hathaway was, and now she's an Academy Award winning actress. Emily Blunt's been nominated for Academy Awards. I can't believe she hasn't won. But I mean, they're literally the top of the top of A-list. And I mean, Meryl Streep's been one for 40, 50 years. And you can see why. I mean, she's so good, and she has a presence that I think just works well. But yeah, you can see it. It's fine. But I think I'm supposed to care about the clothes, and I didn't care about them because I don't understand them.
Yeah, no.
Oh, well.
I was like, oh, they look nice, but I wouldn't
care. Yeah, look at me now. I'm literally wearing a hoodie and shorts.
Yep. Jeans and t-shirt everywhere for me.
We watch movies throughout the week in a segment I call What We've Been Watching.
So, yeah, this is the stuff we've been watching.
Brad, what'd you watch this week?
I rewatched They Live, and gosh, that movie like resonates even more.
Oh, I know, right?
Than when I saw it like 10 years ago.
That's one of those cool movies that, you know, it really is. And it is a response to, you know, Ronald Reagan in the 80s.
Right.
And now you see it and you say, oh, yeah, the banks are still bad guys.
Not even just banks, but like everything in that movie.
Yeah.
Just like
the news.
The news, yeah. And the, all that's undercut by like this long parking lot fight scene.
Yeah, it's so awesome.
This goes on forever for no good reason. Like, just put the glasses on, man. It's not gonna kill you. Just put them on.
Well, Keith David needs to know, motherfucker.
It's like they're like worried that putting the glasses on is gonna like get them sick or something. Too. Okay, I guess we're probably not going to do an episode for it. So Hokum? I saw Hokum.
I think you did talk about that.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's a dick. All right.
Yeah.
Well, shit. Then I don't think I have anything. That's not the boys finale. Damn. Yeah, I guess I don't have anything. The Wizard of the Kremlin?
No, yeah, talk about
did
that
I tell
one.
You about that one?
No.
That would make sense.
You just see so many movies that...
I do. I'm looking at, and also just the way my letterbox is arranged. Yeah. So, yeah, the Monday mystery movie was The Wizard of the Kremlin.
What is that?
That is a movie where Paul Dano is a Russian dude.
Mm. I heard he's not a very good actor.
yeah, I heard that from a director who copies a lot of other people's stuff and makes it into his own movie.
Right.
Yeah, so Paul Dano's this Russian guy, and he gets in with the Russian government, and you kind of see, like, the rise of Putin, and he kinda, he's, like, this guy in the sort of background, kind of manipulating his rise, and then, you know, foolishly, obviously, Putin kind of takes over. So they create a monster, but he has this, like, strong Russian pride, and, yeah, it's just, like, this kind of decades-long movie about this one guy. I don't know, I didn't look up the history of it for real afterwards, but the movie makes it seem like he's a real dude who orchestrated all this stuff. Yeah, Alicia Vikander's in it as his wife, who cheats on him and then runs off with his best friend.
I always like her. She does a lot of smaller scale stuff now.
Yeah. Then she comes back later once he's all successful. Yeah, it's interesting because I don't know a lot about Russian politics, so it's a little glimpse into that. But Paul Dano's performance is so flat in one note. Mm. Like, he's often just standing in a scene going like, Russia.
So Tarantino's right?
I was sitting there watching the movie and, like, you know, it's not a bad performance, but, like, his choice to just, like, have the same emotion and, like, everything. I don't know if it's, like, you know, I assume he researched the character he's playing. Mm-hmm. So maybe that guy was like that. I don't know. Like, but it was really boring to watch. you know, and then Jude Law is Putin, and that's fascinating to watch. But the most, like, crazy thing of the whole movie is this one point where he, like, finishes banging his wife, and he gets up in the middle of the night, and I don't know, not sure why I needed to see it, but you totally see the back of his sack as he's walking away from the bed, and I was just like, oh.
It's like Robert Patrick in T2.
Yeah.
Like, he stands a certain way, and you go, oh, man. Yep.
Aww. It's like, no, don't stand up, don't stand up, don't stand up. Oh, why? Why is this framed like this? There's no reason. So yeah, but it's for art, so it's fine. But yeah, I guess that was pretty much it. That and They Live. I'm working on the booth. What do you expect?
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I just been working so much, but I haven't really watched movies. But ever since I got my premium membership for Nintendo Switch, I've been trying to play the Japanese games that they have, and the hard part is they really don't tell you how to do it. And you have to figure it out. And I base it on, oh, this one has, like, a guy getting punched in the face. So, I mean, how hard could it be? And then you start the game and it's not some side-scrolling beat 'em up. It's, you know, all this text and you, huh.
Like a big RPG story game.
Yeah. So I've been playing a lot of those because it's been really fun. I don't know why I didn't get the premium membership before. Because I think it's only like $40 a year, which is not that expensive.
I think it's 50. The expansion pass?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they release new games all the time. And I've been reliving. I had a Sega Genesis growing up, and they've put a lot of Sega Genesis games on there.
Yeah.
Which is because I have the Sega Genesis collection on PS4, but the Switch has really expanded it to games I played and I'm remembering playing. And so that's been a lot of fun. Yeah, I haven't really watched movies.
I don't need it because I have the Ultimate Collection, but, like, I wish they had more third-party games so I could get, like, Turtles Arcade game on there or something. Yeah. Like, I can just put the card in from the collection I got, but still.
Yeah, it'd be fun. Because I started playing the Japanese version of Wind Waker, too. And, I mean, obviously, it's the game's the same. There's some different music in it, which is kind of fun. Hmm. And trying to, obviously the text is not obviously English, so I'm trying to still figure out how to play it if I remember. And I do. I mean, the puzzles obviously are the same, so if I can figure out exactly how and where to go, I can do it. I've put about 10 hours into it, and I'm getting pretty far, so I think I'll be all right. I hope. I mean, I'm progressing the game, and I'm sailing, and I'm going places, so hey.
I'd even check, like, does the Japanese controller have, like, A, B, Y, X on it?
I'm sure they do. The controller can't be different, can it?
Or is it, like, a Japanese character in place of the ABYX.
No, I think it's ABYX.
When you're playing, it tells you, like, hit A. Yeah, okay.
Listen! Yeah, no, it's fun. So that's cool, because the GameCube one, even the F-Zero, it has both versions of it. Zelda, Wario World.
The NES has, like, every game, like, yeah, the Japanese version on it.
It's pretty cool. And because growing up, I love the River City Ransom stuff. And there's a couple of their other games now on here that are Japanese only. Because they're also the guys who made Super Dodgeball, which is one of my favorite really early sport games. Did you ever play that one?
No.
It's so fun because it's dodgeball. And it's three dudes in on the court for each side. And then you have guys all the way around. And you pass the ball back and forth. And you hit them. And everybody, you know, there's some great players and there's some okay ones. But you can do super shots and it knocks them out and their eyes like bulge out of their head. And it's really, really fun.
Was that a Power Glove game?
I don't believe so. If it was, I never had it. Because I was too poor to have the Power Glove, which I heard was a sweet accessory that it works really well.
Oh, it's so bad.
I mean, Fred Savage crushed it in The Wizard. Yeah, that's all I've done this week. I've literally just played Switch.
Yeah. Cool.
Next week is finally Mortal Kombat 2. I think it's been delayed a year and a half, 2 years.
Yeah, the original came out in 2021. That's 5 years.
Yeah. I know this one was supposed to come out, I think, October of last
year. Definitely last year. Yeah. For sure, yeah.
October of last year. And then they moved it, I think, to November. And then they said, oh, maybe this is more of a summer movie. And then they moved it to May. So yeah, until next time, finish him.
A real nerd knows who shot. A real nerd can follow the plot. A real nerd will come out on the gods. Lights, camera, action.
Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it!